This is the Voice of Freedom. This is the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Don't forget to stay tuned immediately following the hour of the time for the new network program, Quest for Health, with Michael Cottingham. And coming next Monday, immediately the hour before the hour of the time, Jackie Patru will debut with her new broadcast. We now give you This is the hour of the time, and I'm still William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very happy this evening. The wind is blowing, howling outside, as a matter of fact, and there is intermittent sprinkling rain, not yet showers, but the horizon before sunset distinctly promises heavy rain, thunderstorms, probably during the night. But that's not why I'm really pleased. I have here, staying with me tonight, two of my favorite people, Michelle Marie Moore, whom you all listened to last night. Isn't it wonderful, the atmosphere of the wind in the background, which this wonderful microphone from the original days of radio picks up better than any modern microphone made today? And I know that you can hear it. And my best friend in the whole world, Bob Swan, is here, who's going to be the guest on the broadcast tonight. And we're just going to talk about whatever comes into our mind. And that could be an awful lot of things. We'll probably tell some old stories. And that'll be a lot of fun. Because I guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, if you had known me in my youth, when Bob and I were wild and woolly and full of spunk and vim and vigor, you would have a difficult time recognizing William Cooper. Don't go away. I'll be right back with my special guest, very special guest, Robert Swan, after this brief pause.
Come on, let's crazy cat. Nothing to lose, come on, let's crazy cat. Nothing to lose, come on, let's crazy cat. Nothing to lose, come on, let's crazy cat. Come on, let's crazy cat.
Now you're all listening to the lyrics of this last musical selection. You're thinking that I just put that on there. But, you know, those lyrics just literally parallel the life that Bob and I led in our younger days. We lived in Hawaii. I was a member of the United States Navy, attached as the intelligence briefing team member of the intelligence briefing team, the commander-in-chief of the United States Pacific Fleet. And I've been accused of lying about that and not really being a member of the intelligence briefing team of Admiral Bernard Clary, who was the commander-in-chief of the United States Pacific Fleet at Makalapa in Hawaii. And Bob was there at that time, and he can clarify that for anybody who is doubtful or who is still doubtful about my credentials. And in fact, Bob can tell you an awful lot of things, most of which I don't want him ever to tell anyone. Bob, welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
Well, you got
we sure had a good time over there. And, you know, as we were talking earlier today, it's amazing how through the time the years have passed, 25 years, and how we came to become friends instantly, as a matter of fact. Back when I was running the diving company and you were out there at St. Pat Fleet. And I just find it amazing how, after all of these years, that you and I have been such good friends. And here we are in the same fight for our freedom and the security and prosperity of our families and country.
Yeah, that's true, and sometimes I have to marvel at that. But I think that the basic reason is that you and I have never changed in our basic personality or our honesty or belief structure. We've just learned an awful lot more.
Yeah, that's right.
And the very basis of our friendship has always been a tremendous openness and honesty and trust. Even to the point of our very lives, because some of the things that we used to do together were extremely dangerous.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, the different people I've talked to along the way about our past, and they say, well, how is it that you have been such good friends for all these years? And I specifically remember one time when you saved my life, and when I was sinking. And you reached over the boat and grabbed me and the anchor that I was sinking with. I was out of air, but there you were. And really took me back, because that same bronze anchor is now on your lanai.
And lanai, folks, is a porch, for those of you who don't know that Hawaiian slang. And, that's been the symbol of our friendship all these years, actually. You held it for many years, and now...
We passed it.
I'm holding it. It's my turn.
Yeah.
And we pledged to each other that we would always keep that anchor with one or the other of us as a symbol of our of our deep friendship.
Well, that was I would have died, you know, and so that attachment to that thing is probably about the only thing that really. I hold a value in my life besides my family and my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one of the stories I don't eat back when I was building after the diving business, working for Claire Booth Luce. It was really kind of funny. We were sitting there and you were having.
Well, for the sake of our listeners, Claire Booth Luce was the wife of
Henry Luce.
Henry Luce, who owned the Time Life Empire. And she was extremely wealthy. And at the time that we knew her, she was an elderly woman. Her sight was failing her, but she was full of life.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just bubbling with life. And so take it from there.
Well, it was a time when you could, when you were off from St. Pat Fleet. And Claire wanted to build a presidential pavilion for Richard Nixon. Because the last time they were out there, the Hawaiian sun was a little too hot, so we were in the process of designing this.
Yeah, he got sunburned, so she had commissioned us to build this pavilion to keep the sun off of the president and his entourage.
Yeah, it was incredible. But they, as we were sitting there in the lanai, I'll never forget it, you know, as you looked across the grounds, you said, you know, I recognize that guy. And it's amazing.
But I couldn't place who it was.
Yeah, because it wasn't in the context of, you know, the Navy. And Claire looked over at me and she says, you know, there's only one thing that I want in my life. And I said, you know, Claire, well, what could that be? You already have everything. She says, you know, my desire is just to marry a homosexual admiral so I can have all these cute little sailors come around and mow my lawn. And I'll never forget the expression on your face. It just, you went cold, you know. It was not a funny day, I'll tell you. But
no, it was not. And all of a sudden I knew who that guy was. But she was quite a woman. I can remember when we would be working on something in her yard and she would invite us to come have lunch with her or have a glass of iced tea. And she was always interested in things that we had not even thought about or considered. Well, I remember one day she asked us what she thought of the proposition of the equality of women in the workplace. And I don't remember what we said. It was probably something extremely stupid. I really don't know because we were, what, 20?
Oh, yeah.
In our 20s, early 20s, middle 20s, something like that. If I had said anything, and I don't really remember what I said, or if I did, I probably would have said, well, I think women should probably make as much as a man makes in the same job. Not really understanding what it was that she was really talking about, because her mind was way beyond the rest of the world, it seemed to me. Because she was really concerned about things and used to probe us just to see what we were going to say. And then later, in later years, I recognized that those social trends were coming about, that she was probing us, trying to get our opinion of what we would think about those things way back then. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, she was really a gracious hostess. The her whole staff there was...
They treated us as if they'd known us all of their lives and as if we were dear friends, when in reality we were probably more acquaintances and people that had been hired to do a specific job, and yet we were taken in just as if we were family.
Yeah. I wish more people in that position, and I've met a lot of extremely wealthy people, but she made people feel all equal, as it were, but
important,
yeah.
I mean, really, who do you know would call the hired help in to have lunch and tea and then probe their minds as if they were experts in the subject,
right.
and really lend a lot of importance to what those ideas or those thoughts might be.
You know, what was also incredible about Claire Luce is her personal secretary, Mrs. Pierce. Her organization and her preciseness in everything that she did, even everybody that took care of that estate and everybody she treated well. Mm. And she never put anybody down or elevated herself as a lot of people naturally elevated her, being the ambassadress that she was. I wish the affluent or the elite that are taking this us down this path could stop for a minute and
spend a day with Claire Boucluse.
Yeah, and spend a day with seeing children laugh and play, and they won't stop long enough to do that.
Yeah. You know, there were an awful lot of tremendous opportunities that we had. And some of them, I fear that we probably blew away in our perpetual search for parties and fun and the sun and the waves and the sand and all of that kind of stuff. I remember that my job required me to go in at about 4 o'clock in the morning and prepare the briefing for the admiral and his staff, which would occur about 8 o'clock in the morning. And then after that, I was finished. And for the rest of the day, and I would go down and work at the dive shop, and we would go and take charters out and teach diving classes and occasionally do some commercial diving work and things of that nature. And at the end of the day, we would go up to the pool bar at the Reef Hotel, and our habit was to sit there and talk and have a ball and harass the tourists and have 3 Mai Tais. And then if we had a dinner date, we would go pick up our dates and go on a dinner date, or we would, you know, stumble home and go to bed or whatever it was. 3 Mai Tais is quite a bit. You know, I know a lot of people go out and drink all night, but they're not drinking Mai Tais.
Well, I think in that time frame, because of what you were doing and what you had access to and what your oath was, there were a lot of things that you couldn't talk about and wouldn't talk about. And so there was a lot of release that you had in our association in diving and going out and having a few Mai Tais.
Because I wasn't in the military then. And nobody really knew that I was in the military except you and maybe a couple other guys. And I could just let it all hang out and get loose and really have a good time.
Yeah.
And I remember you guys would probe me about things, and I would just tell you I can't talk about those things at all. But later, that changed, and I chose you to confide in, and I did talk quite a bit about a lot of things, specifically with you. But those were the days for you and I mean, really wine and roses and sunshine and plucking the flowers off the trees and just having
just a blast. Yeah,
it was the kind of life that a lot of people dream about, and we were extremely fortunate to be able to live that life.
Yeah.
We participated in the finish of the Trans-Pac races. I mean, we met all the important people in Hawaii. I don't know about you, but I tried to count all the beautiful girls that we knew at that time, and I couldn't count them. They were just endless. They just came in an endless stream from all over the world and to the dive shop to learn how to dive or to go out and snorkel and scuba dive. And they were just such wonderful, vibrant people, and here we were in this fantastic, romantic job. And so we were never without a date.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it was really good for you because that was right after Vietnam and all the dramas that you went through over there. So it was a vacation for you. It was almost like a Disneyland.
It was more than that. It was like dying and going to heaven for me after Vietnam, which had to be the epitome of hell on earth. If there is a hell on earth, I mean, that had to be it. And that's why so many Vietnam veterans are so screwed up. Because we all went there wanting deep within our hearts to be doing the right thing and thinking that we were and believing that. and wanting to become heroes and come back home and be able to march in the Veterans Day Parade as we had seen our fathers and uncles and grandfathers and great-grandfathers do all of the time that we were growing up. And then when we got over there learning that there was no glory in war and there wasn't fun, there was no heroism to it. People did what they had to do when they had to do it to survive and to ensure the survival of their friends and comrades in arms. And most of us, when we did those things, we did them without even thinking about it. And you know, I don't believe that you can be a hero without consciously weighing the odds and deciding, you know, you're going to give your life or risk giving your life in the process. And I don't think anybody ever did that. I don't care who they were. And I've got to tell you, I served with some people that if anybody could have been called heroes, they were. And in a couple of instances, I was called a hero and given two medals with the V for Valor. But I have to say that I wasn't. I just did what I was required to do in order to live. And that's what people do under those circumstances. But the conditions and the rules and the where you could fire and where you couldn't fire and everything just ensured that we were constantly plagued with the inability to win. And that was a tremendous burden. And the rotation that you had to leave after a year was another tremendous burden because you felt like you were abandoning, in my instance, my crew, because I was a patrol boat captain. And I felt like, you know, in a way they were my children and my charges and I was responsible for them. And so when I left there, I went to Hawaii and was attached to St. Pat Fleet and this beautiful land of flowers and women and wine and song and dancing and perpetual sunshine and an ocean that never got cold. You know, we would go spend the whole day in the water.
Yeah.
And come out, we would be wrinkled, but not cold. And just love it. I mean, we were like fish. That was heaven.
Yeah.
To me. And
well, you know, you always had the capability of separating. You know, except in rare times when, you know, when the whole Vietnam experience just kind of came down on you like a ton of bricks. But you did release yourself in those times, you know, diving and experiencing the creation of the beauty around you. And that's really admirable to be able to do that.
In love.
Yeah.
I would, on occasion, fall desperately head over heels in love.
That was an easy thing to do.
Oh, yes. And, you know, I still do that. But I do it very discriminately now with Annie.
Right.
Over and over and over and over again.
Well, you know, I think what we have to do in what we're trying to do to stabilize and put power back into families and hold on to our country, what we have to do is we have to live life to the fullest, love to the fullest. And I think you had mentioned that the time of the greatest acceleration was when you're closest to death,
mm-hmm.
because that's when you really feel alive.
That's when you're living the most.
Right.
That's when you really realize what life is all about. And people who've never walked on the edge of the razor blade really don't understand that. That's one thing that many of us came away from Vietnam with was an understanding of life and an understanding of death and a reconciliation with the fear of death so that an awful lot of us don't have that fear anymore. And I think that's something that you probably recognized in me very early on is that nothing ever scared me. I just was not afraid after that. And there was nothing that could threaten me if I had gone through that ordeal.
Well, you know, when you really look at what's going on and the what's plaguing the American family and business person is the control of fear. You know, so The way I think of it is the only way to control people is through fear, intimidation, and ignorance.
Yes, and we talked a lot about that today. And one of the ways that people are controlled the most is that it's ingrained within them throughout their life that they must attach some strange value to material possessions and money. And so the threat of losing that is terrifying and paralyzing, so that people cannot act and do the right thing if they believe that in doing the right thing they're going to lose these material possessions, which they have been taught all their life have such great meaning. Yet those material possessions can't love them, can't protect them, can't give them solace. There is no spiritual sustenance or nourishment there. And it's the wrong thing. And I've said it many times on this broadcast that if you can't get up and walk away from everything that you own without any guilt pangs or feelings of remorse, and without even the urge to look back, then you're not free. And you can't ever be free until you can do that, because that love of material possessions is what will be used against you to enslave you. That's that longing for security,
right,
and to be surrounded with comfort and fine, nice things and a microwave, because you don't want to take too long to cook your food.
Well, that's how people equate their success is their Gucci bag or the new Corvette in their garage. So,
but is that really success?
No, not even close. You know, What's really interesting, just some statistics I'll throw out here, is in 1950 the tax base or the burden was 2% of income, and a family could support themselves on 25% of their income. Now, a statistic that I heard, I haven't verified it, but I'm sure it's quite accurate, is at that time, the income rate, not the unemployment rate, but the income, the employed rate, was 30% of our population. Right now,
you're going to blow people's minds with that 30%, because they're thinking in modern day terms. So why don't you explain what that really means?
Well, the 30% of the population was working. They had jobs. Moms could stay home and care for the children, nurture the children. So when you talk about success, in my opinion of what that is looking back at my kids. And I feel very fortunate that my wife was able to raise the kids and be in the family business.
I was there when you got married.
Oh, yeah, I know you were. Yeah. And you've seen my kids grow up.
Yes.
So when people equate success to the wardrobe in the closet or the car in the garage or the house on the hill and the astronomical mortgage payment, but their kids are on drugs or hate them, that to me is not success. But having that family that you can embrace and love, then that is what success is. And unfortunately, it seems the controlling elite, I haven't seen it, but I can just speculate that there isn't a whole lot of love in those families. Any nurturing of the children is more than likely done by outside sources.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the same way. I mean, your family structure is the same as mine. So that, in my opinion, is success. The thing that I find to be true, in my opinion, is the greatest gift that God gave us is the power of imagination. And through imagination comes creation. You know, an architect can't create a beautiful structure if he's constantly worried about the billing hours or the attorneys in many instances, probably the reason why there's some very hideous structures out there was the architect's concern was those issues.
So he was afraid they couldn't make the house payment.
That's right.
So they had to hurry up and do this thing.
Yeah, so the creative mind or the creative spirit through the imagination can only flourish and grow if a person is free from worry, fear, intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the things that I'd really like to hope that people could focus on is, along with these desperate times of the UN taking over our national parks at an alarming rate, and the biodiversity treaty coming online, and the destruction of our country, if we can maybe focus along the way on the positive, because if we immerse ourselves in the negative, how can we ever pull out of the negative?
Well, this is what I really enjoyed about Michael Cottingham's initial broadcast. It was his first broadcast on our new network last night. And he went into a talk about living, not just surviving, but living. And I really got enthused in that because I believe in that. That's what I've always done. I've always walked on the razor blade and lived life to the fullest and tried to do the very best that I'm able to do for my family and for the world and for my community. And I recognized that when he was talking about this, that sometimes, especially in my commercials with Swiss America Trading, I'm talking about surviving. And I found fault with that. And I'm really so happy that Michael brought that up and talked about it, because that's not my intention get people into just this survival mode. While they're preparing to survive what we all know is coming, they must at the same time be in the process of living,
right,
and living a happy, full life, and doing the right things, and being spiritually nourished and be able to give others that spiritual nourishment that they need. Because that's really what it's all. It's not about material possessions. It's about love. It's about spiritual nourishment. It's about doing the right thing regardless of the consequences. We all have to die eventually. And it doesn't matter when you die. It's how you die that is of the utmost importance. And it's not about surviving, it's about living. And it's not just about living, it's about how you're living that's important.
Right.
And so you're absolutely correct about that. And Michael was right on target last night. I can't wait to hear his broadcast tonight, because he's a dear friend too. I mean, he doesn't have the concrete foundation that our friendship has, but he certainly is a good dear friend.
You know, it's the discussion of friendship, and I think probably a lot of the listening audience will recognize this. But as friends part and they're gone, they're separated for years on end. When you reestablish that friendship, or you walk back in, and it's as if time had not stopped. I mean, you pick up right where you left off.
Yeah, it's as if time had stopped.
Right.
As if nothing had changed.
Yeah. Except, you know, I'm a little balder and grayer.
Well, me too.
And we're both a little fatter.
Mm-hmm. But every time we meet, no matter what the interval of time between those meetings is, it's as if there had never been
a break, or
a break at all. And it just picks up exactly where it left off. And you know what I really appreciate about you, Bob, is that you have never changed or grown cold or ceased your zest for life and adventure, and you have never ever become deceitful or dishonest. You are still the same young, enthusiastic, wonderful person that I met in Hawaii many, many years ago, and I'm just so thrilled with that. It's amazing, because so many people become jaded, and they learn how to become deceitful and lie and manipulative and all of these different kinds of things. And that has never happened with either one of us.
You know, when I had my construction company in Hawaii, I looked at various people that I had seen go the path of money.
Mm-hmm.
And in my readings and so on, there was a sinus, Wilhelm Reich, and what he was able to do is prove the life force energy through people. And I looked at some of these people, and they were dead. There was absolutely no life in them because they had pursued the money. And they had lost track of that love or the of free giving. In other words, when you give freely where you don't expect a return payment, their reality point was, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to get something back. And they were dead. And so I equated money.
They're not really dead. They're animated. I mean, they're living and moving and around, but it's as if there's no one in there.
Right.
It's as if you knocked on the door, no one would ever answer. There's just nobody home. Like there's no soul in that body. It's vacant.
Yeah.
And the more that they pursue those goals and those, that type of life, the more vacant it appears to me that they become. And you know, adversely, if you lead the other type of life, it's like you grow in spirit and in love and in truth and all of those kinds of things. One of the things I was so proud of last night, because I really had not realized how much Michael had paid attention to my lecture on truth when he came to the conference 2 years ago. And that's when we became friends. I gave a lecture on the quest for truth and what that means and what it's all about. And last night on his opening broadcast, he talked about that. He talked about it as if that had become his whole life. And he calls his broadcast The Quest for Help. And he talked about the quest for truth and what that was all about and everything. It almost brought tears to my eyes because, you know, sometimes I just don't get feedback on these things. And I realized that somebody had really listened to me and really had understood what it was that I was trying to say, and that the value of one's life depends upon one's serious quest for the truth and spiritual nourishment rather than all of the other things that are out there. And so last night Michael returned that to me by giving me back that spiritual nourishment that apparently he had obtained from me during that lecture over 2 years ago.
Don't you find it interesting of when you live your life that way? When you need it, when you need that uplift, it's there for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're depressed or something, and all of a sudden the gift comes to you. And then what I've been focusing on lately is who really is in charge here, and it certainly isn't me. As things unfold in my life daily, I realize that I'm not the one making things happen or bringing things together. To the extent of how we started is when we met in Hawaii almost 25 years ago,
mm-hmm.
how we were brought together at that point in time and instantly became friends, and here we are these 25 years later. So I find it nourishing to realize that there's another power there, and I believe that the work that we're involved in right now is we are effectively, you and I and a number of other people out there, is we're confronting and working within the exact forces that are battling the energies of good and evil are about us.
It's a war.
Yeah.
It is literally, not figuratively, but literally, we are engaged in a very serious, very devastating and terrible war. And it is, as I've said many times over the last 4 years, it is a war between the armies of good versus the armies of evil. And everyone regardless of who they are or what religion they belong to or what country they live in, are going to be required very shortly to make a choice as to which side they are going to fight upon, or whether they're going to stand in the middle. And I have to say, if they stand in the middle, they will be totally devastated. They will have to choose one side or the other. And this is going to be a terrific conflict, out of which we all hope and pray will come a much better world. You know, no one really knows what the outcome will be, but we all feel that if we're fighting upon the side of good and righteousness, that it will be a better world. We have to believe that.
Yeah, and you know, I think if each one of us on a daily basis in trying to remain positive, we need to go out, and when we see an elderly lady that needs help with her groceries, go help her. I had an experience when I was driving down from San Francisco to San Diego a month or so ago, that I went into a gas station. I was fueling up with my plastic credit cards and so on, and there was a Spanish family, and they were dressed up. You know, it looks like I thought they were either going to church or just coming back from church, because it was Sunday, and they had on their Sunday best. And this gentleman, Mexican gentleman, was counting out his change on the counter. And I looked at him, and I had a $10 bill in my pocket. And I put it down on the counter, and I said, "Go ahead, put gas in your car." And the guy's mouth just dropped. You know, why would this stranger come up and do that? But the joy that I felt from that was incredible. So I think for the listening audience, in the times of trouble and so on that are around us, is if we can just on a daily basis go out and help somebody else, help them, uplift them. And in doing so, what it will do to you, how it will make you feel, is infinitely better. And that's how we're going to win this fight out here, is keep the spirit going and love your fellow man, because there's enough hatred around here to consume us if we let that happen. So let's not let that happen.
Yes. That's true. And one of the worst things in the world is this blind hatred that everybody has for no reason at all. Simply because of, who knows why? I've never been able to figure it out. You take a bunch of children, put them in a room, they don't hate each other. And if they grow up together, unless there's some outside force that comes in and tells them that you can't like that guy over there because he's black, or he's a Jew, or he's... his hair is white, and he's just 7 years old, and when you're 7 years old, your hair is not supposed to be white, so he's a freak, and you got to call him a freak and treat him that. Children just don't do that unless somebody else teaches them to do that. They will... Did I hear that? Your stomach growled so loud that I heard it through the earphones, and it went out over the radio around the world. Well, that's okay, because I had the wonderful opportunity to feed Bob some smoked snake tonight, and he devoured it with great gusto, and now his stomach is growling, so it's okay.
You know, it's the one of the experiences that we had sailing in the South Pacific. The various villages,
and when you say we, that's not you and I. That's you and your wife,
yeah,
and
my youngest son, Sheldon. Yeah. We went through the various island groups, Western Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, and also American Samoa, the Cook Islands. But in all of those islands down there, other than American Samoa, the village conditions, which we would in our country say they were poverty stricken, you couldn't believe the joy in those kids kicking around a water bottle, or hand making kites and flying them. The church services down there were absolutely incredible in the Fijian Islands. the congregations in the various churches would get together annually for an award for the best choirs and so on. The energy and the music that came out of those people were absolutely phenomenal. They were alive.
Do you remember a movie called Donovan's Reef with Lee Marvin and Diana?
Yeah.
Is it something like that?
Yeah, yeah. But then when we got to American Samoa, the difference was night and day. The school kids there were the Crips and the Bloods. And there were the skinheads, and they were, and all it was a little dinky island, no bigger than one eye.
Mm-hmm. And they all ran around hating each other.
Yeah, and I
thought, real smart. I got to tell you, you live on this postage stamp in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and you run around trying to push everybody else into the ocean while they're trying to push you into the ocean and just hate each other with all your might.
Yeah,
real smart.
But that's the influence. That's the influence of what's happening to our kids in this country.
Movies and television.
Yeah.
And
the educational system.
Bullshit. And,
And so when I look out at the kids in my neighborhood and see other kids in this country, my heart goes out to them because they have so much, but they have nothing.
They have no spiritual reality of who they are, where they came from, what this country is all about. I've always had this feeling, and my friend Anthony Hilder has sort of partway proven it. I've always had this feeling that if I could go into the biggest ghettos and the biggest cities where these children's and teenagers' hearts have been so solidified, like they're like stone, and they've been so desensitized to where killing another child is nothing to them. If I could just sit down with them and tell them who they are and what this is all about, how they're being used, and what their lifestyle is doing to them and to their future, and make them understand that we're engaged in a war, which they are at the present time losing, I've just had this feeling that they would all of a sudden become a tremendous force for good and for the future. And Anthony Hilder has actually done that in South Central LA. He's gone into the deepest, most dangerous parts of that community, where they read my book, by the way. In those communities, my book is recommended as required reading whenever anything can be required. And he went down there, and there was a gang meeting place where they would all go and meet and sort of on neutral ground. And he said they were projecting huge pictures of the cover of my book on the wall. And then they would have speakers get up and talk about things. And then Anthony walked in, and because he's white, he was immediately attacked and threatened and everything like that. And some of the leaders recognized him and urged him to get up and talk. And so he got up and talked to these people. And because of that, because of his bravery and his courage to go down and do that, he has actually caused some gang members and gang leaders to begin to set out on this quest for the truth. And to begin to teach their other comrades, if you will, their friends and neighbors and other gang members, what is really happening to them and how they're being used to help destroy this country. And they don't want to be used in that way. See, but they never understood it before. And so there is some hope in some small corners, because it's not a big movement, because some of these kids have been so turned off and desensitized and abused and have been so rejected that there's no coming back for some of them. I mean, we have to be realistic. But for some of them, there is a coming back, and there is hope, and there is the promise that they can help make things right.
There's a black educator in the Bronx, and I believe it was on 60 Minutes a week or so ago, of what she's doing in that community. And the feeling is that those kids from the ghetto over there, is every single one of them will go to college and do what they want to do in life, because she has given them the self-esteem. Those kids are from broken homes, and various family members have been murdered in the streets. But the as the program laid out, each of those kids had an incredible hope, and you could see that in their eyes. And so, as our communities, if we can get those groups to rethink possibly how they have gotten to that position, whether it's through the churches or other people in the community, charities that can actually go in there and assist in those areas. A group of 10 people that improve will expand to 20 and 30 and so on. I have a great feeling that the evil that is out there and the destruction, the planned destruction of our communities, will win, you know, because people want to do what's right and people are basically honest. And
it sounded like you said, the evil and destruction out there will win.
No.
What you meant is we will win.
Right, that's correct. Yeah, we'll win over that evil and destruction.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I think so, too. I don't think anybody consciously ever sets out to do bad things or to be evil or to hurt other people. I think it's a consequence of being disenfranchised, not being accepted or loved, and not feeling that there's a place, and seeking out someone or some group or some gang who will accept them, but it's always on some terms that's destructive. And there's no guidance spiritual direction, if you will, for these people.
You know, on the spiritual side, what there was a study done, and the crime rate parallels the almost identically the decline in the church attendance,
disintegration of the family, the proliferation of single-parent homes where the mother is the parent. I hate to say this, folks, but it's true, and you can call me a male chauvinist pig if you want to. I don't care what you say. I have watched this. I have noticed it. I see it everywhere. Women are not prone to provide the proper discipline for young people that is necessary. And at a certain stage in a young person's life, if they actually feel that they can overpower that mother, she has lost total control. If she has no tremendous foundation in love and spiritual guidance for that child, the child is going to disregard whatever the mother says from that point on, and will live whatever kind of life they want to live. And that's a tremendous tragedy. Where there is a male in the home and discipline is administered properly, and expectations are placed before the child, and the child knows the limits and the rules of what they can and what they can't do, what's expected, and they're loved, really given tremendous love and spiritual nourishment, these things don't happen. They just do not happen. Now, don't equate love and spiritual guidance in a home where there's a father and mother with wealth, because that's not what it's all about. Because I hear some people say, well, Johnny comes from the best family, and they have everything that you could possibly imagine, and his father's rich, and he just murdered his, you know, Susie down the street. Wealth has nothing to do with the proper discipline and upbringing and loving and guidance of a child. Nothing whatsoever. And I can remember a time in this country when the financial position of a family had nothing to do with the upbringing and the guidance of the children. and you would find the same manners and the same behavior from children who came from very poor homes that came from very rich homes. And when they addressed their elders, they would say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and were polite and did the right thing. And over the years that I have, just in my lifetime, I have seen the moral values and the discipline of children and the respect for other human beings, not just their elders, just absolutely flushed down the toilet. And to the point where children have no guidance, no structure, no promise, no love, no nothing. They're lost. They have no sense of history, no sense of belonging, no sense of tradition. It's no wonder that they're so lost, and so many of them have so little hope and have set out on some of the destructive lives that they have chosen.
You know, as someone in the listening audience out there could either verify this or deny it, but one of the destructive elements that I feel is causing a lot of this is the inability of our churches to address certain issues. Because in the Constitution, what we hear from the media is there'll be a separation of church and state, but that's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution says there shall be no state religion. But unfortunately, what some of these church organizations have done is they've gone and asked to be recognized as a tax-exempt organization, and so they've gone to the Internal Revenue Service and asked them to please recognize them, and please give me one of your 501(c) corporations.
Which is blatantly unconstitutional, and they become a state religion. And they're controlled by the state.
Yeah.
They're no longer free.
No, they're dictated on what they can say from the pulpit.
And they never understood that the Constitution protected them in the beginning. They did not have to have a 501(c)(3) to have a tax-exempt status.
That's right.
One of the churches in this country that most people laugh at and disregard and think is a funny little organization is the Universal Life Church. Yet the Universal Life Church has refused in all of its history to accept the 501(c)(3) status or any other status for the Internal Revenue Service, has never paid a nickel in taxes because you cannot tax a religion according to the Constitution. And they have been taken to court innumerable times, hundreds of times by the federal government and the Internal Revenue Service, and they have won every single time that has happened.
You know, it's real unfortunate that more church organizations don't realize that, because if they did and they got off of that 501(c) status, worked with their constitutional rights, then they could discuss from the pulpit issues that are facing that congregation.
And political candidates or anything else that they wanted to discuss, but they cannot do that now.
That's correct.
And that's how the government has taken control of the churches in this country. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back after this pause for the network identification.
Thank you.
This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, the Freedom Radio Network is made up of people all across this country and other countries who have satellite receivers and low-power FM transmitters. If you have a satellite receiver and you are interested in being a network affiliate of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, please send a letter to Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. That's Harvest, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Please place in the lower left-hand outside corner of the envelope, attention, Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Please tell us that you have a satellite Earth receiving station and you wish to be an affiliate broadcaster with the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, and we'll send you the information on how you can get a low-power FM transmitter and become a real force for change and for truth in your neighborhood, in your city, in your community. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Hour of the Time, brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets, real money, gold and silver, and all of their various forms, coins, bullion, medallions, memorial mints, and special edition coins, centennials, you name it. Anything that's collectible or valuable that's made of gold or silver, Swiss America Trading can. Ladies and gentlemen, there are forces at work in this world to destroy this great nation and bring about a totalitarian world socialist government upon the ashes of the United States of America. It's called the New World Order, the New Age, the Golden Dawn, the New Dawn, the Rising of the Phoenix. I could go on and on and on. There are all kinds of symbolic names for this New Order, which Hitler spoke of, by the way. And ladies and gentlemen, the New World Order is not going to be any different than that envisioned by Adolf Hitler. And if you look around, if you compare what's happening today with the way this nation was 25 years ago, you're going to find that we are in deep, deep trouble. 1-800-289-2646. Ask for the current newsletter. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time and for the financial backing for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Without Swiss America Trading, you would not be listening to this broadcast at this time. You would not be listening to Michael Cottingham following this broadcast. You would not be able to listen to Jackie Patru as her broadcast debuts next Monday night, 1 hour preceding the beginning of the Hour of the Time. So, ladies and gentlemen, you owe Swiss America Trading. If you're going to deal in hard assets, if you're going to get your hands on some real money, please do it with them. If you don't, if you can't, for some reason, at least call them and thank them for what they are doing. And then
get your hands on some real money from someplace. Because I don't ever want to see you devastated by what is sure to come as the communist and socialist forces in this world continue on their route to bring about their socialist totalitarian world order, and in the process of their elimination of the middle class and the redistribution of wealth. Think I'm crazy? Well, maybe I am. Maybe I am, ladies and gentlemen. Do you really want to stick around and find out? I mean, what is it that these people really think about you? When's the last time you really sat down and thought about it? I suggest you do it right now. In the meantime, while you're listening to this, call Swiss America Trading 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-BUY-COIN.
Turn on the surveillance monitor.
Yes, sir.
It's worse than I thought. Each morning at night, they tickle through the cake. They go home early. They come in late. Reeking of cheap liquor, they stumble through the day. Never give a thought to honest work for honest pay. I know it shouldn't vex me. I shouldn't take it hard. I should ignore their capering with a kingly disregard. But look at all those idiots. Oh, look at all those fools. An office full of morons. A factory full of fools. You can wonder I'm singing the blues. And just getting started, they make personal phone calls on company time. They Xerox their buttocks and get you paid the time. Their blatant thievery wounds me, their ingratitude astounds. I long to lure them to my home and then release the hounds. I shouldn't grow unsettled when faced with the abuse. I shouldn't let it plague me. I shouldn't blow abuse. But look at all those idiots. Oh, look at all those fools. An office full of morons. A factory full of fools. Is it any wonder I'm singing the blues? What happened? Where are the instruments?
I believe they call it a breakdown, sir.
I can't have any breakdowns here. What if there was an inspector around? Play a guitar solo.
I'm a little out of practice, sir.
Hey, say, do it! No, do it! Do it! Do it!
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. Thought I had my mojo working.
That man by the cooler drinking water heavy as spray.
Oh, that's Homer Simpson, sir. A drone from Sector 7G.
Yeah, we'll call the Simpson to my office and say to us the fun. If he speaks when he enters, he'll be 2 feet when I'm done. It brings a ray of sunshine to my unhappy life. To make him kneel before me and slowly twist the knife. Look at all those idiots. Look at all those fools. An office full of morons. A factory full of fools. Should it be any wonder that I'm singing the blues?
Take me home, sir.
I'm trying. Surrounded by idiots. Outnumbered by fools. An office full of morons. A planet full of fools. Singing the blues.
Burns, you make muddy water sound shallow and cheerful.
Thank you, Smithers. Meaningless but heartfelt compliment. I feel like I got a few things off my chest and under the chests of my inferiors.
You're dead.
Why are they still playing?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to read you some objectives here, and I'm not going to go into any details on them. I'll let Bob talk about that if he wants to. And then I'm going to shock you with where this came from. Objective to make nature the central organizing principle. Objective, to establish a legal regime that will utilize international treaties to control all policies from the international level to the national and local levels. Objective, to make the use of natural resources a cost. Objective, to promote the precautionary principle that scientific evidence is not necessary to implement radical environmental policies. Objective, to inventory natural and human resources. Objective, to make man equal to all other species. Objective, to classify people as the enemy. Objective, to create areas devoid of human presence. And objective, to make nature worship a state religion. Now I'm going to shock you, ladies and gentlemen. Where did those come from? What is the origination of those objectives? And who do they apply to? Why they apply to you, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, because they come from the Convention on Biological Diversity, a treaty entered into by the President of the United States and ratified by the 103rd Congress First Session Senate. You can find the entire text of this treaty in Treaty Documents 103-20. It is called the Convention on Biological Diversity, with annexes done at Rio de Janeiro, June 5th, 1992, and signed by the United States in New York on June 4th, 1993. What do you think about that? You want to comment on that, Bob?
Well, all these years you've been talking to the American people about what's going on, what I would suggest that everybody goes out and does immediately, go out to Yosemite National Park and look at who owns it. Take a look at what's going on with our the Smoky Mountains. Go look at the National Park Monument and look at what it says there. What's going on is this treaty is consuming our natural resources, our national parks, and they're stealing our lands away from us right underneath our eyes.
That's what it means when you go to a national park, and at the entrance it says the United Nations Biosphere. Under this treaty, great portions of our country, our national parks, are being turned over to the United Nations Biosphere Project, and soon there will be zones created all throughout this country and the rest of the countries of the world where human use and habitation is absolutely prohibited. And that is one of the clear goals that they have outlined and mapped and everything else. In fact, they've mapped the locations in every state where human beings will be allowed to inhabit and use. There will be buffer zones where the use of which will be severely restricted, and then there will be zones where no human use or habitation will be allowed whatsoever. And you're holding some of those maps in your hands. Why don't you talk about that, Bob?
Well, I'm looking at the Bread Belt right through the center of the United States, and it's all, there's about 25 areas for human habitation. What really got to me about a year ago was people that were losing their ranch lands due to wetlands by the Bureau of Land Management. And I thought, well, what is going on here? But now I know what's going on.
Well, let's define wetlands for a moment, because I happen to know exactly what it is. If you have a piece of land where, when it rains, water stands above the surface of the land without sinking into the land for 16 days out of the 365 days of the year, that's wetlands. And if it's wetlands, you can't use it, can't develop it, can't graze cattle on it, it's gone.
That's right. There's ranches up in the Montana that their watering holes have been fenced off. Their cattle cannot graze on there, so these cattle ranches have been put out of business. The water, they claim, well, it comes from this particular stream. This particular stream we have to control. So the organizations that are controlling these have all been formed out of treaties. And what this biodiversity treaty is all about is turning over our resources and our family farms and so on to the United Nations to establish a new banking system when we fail to make our payment to the Federal Reserve Bank.
All unconstitutional and unlawful, I might add. And it's through erroneous interpretation of Article 6 of the Constitution, which says that treaties shall become part of the law. But when our founding fathers wrote the Constitution and wrote Article 6 of the Constitution, they did not mean that. You see, they set out how the Constitution could be altered, amended, and they're very specific about that in that document. They did not intend for treaties to alter or change the supreme law of the land of the Constitution. That only can be done by amendment. Therefore, any treaties entered into must conform to the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. And they have succeeded in baffling the American people with bullshit to believe that treaties actually supersede the Constitution and become the supreme law of the land, thereby negating, subverting, and destroying the Constitution for the United States of America, and eliminating the protection for our Creator endowed rights. And that's where all of this comes from. You know, we can take your calls if you want to at 520-333-4578. We're going to keep on with our little conversation here. If you want to call and talk about any of these subjects, you're welcome to do that. In fact, we have somebody calling right now, so let's see what's going on here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. Bob?
Yeah, good evening.
You sound like a pretty level-headed, laid-back, and think-it-out-right type of guy.
Boy, he sure doesn't know you, does he?
Well, thank you.
Little joke there.
Thank you.
I look at the situation with our country, and I think, why and where, how did it happen? And it takes me back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, when we were totally bare ass in this country as far as civil defense, and the Russians were armed to the T and had the way to shelter who they wanted to. And like fools, we let it happen. But I think that we did not win that Cuban Missile Crisis. I think we backed down politically. Kennedy might have went through with a missile launch, but politically, they stopped him. And then afterwards, they assassinated him. And then afterwards, they assassinated any politician, any newsman, anybody that got too close to the truth. They were dead. And it opened the eyes of the politicians in this country, and they said, well, we lost. We either red or dead. And I think they bought it. And I think that's where this country has been going ever since. And the people have been hoodwinked and fed a big line about the Constitution and everything. And we thought we had these rights, but they had no intentions of giving them to us. And now we come down to the truth. And the truth is coming out, and this environmental stuff, it's a cold war, I believe. They're going to take over this country by treaty, by law, and they don't even have to fire a shot. But there's people like Bill Cooper and many other great patriots in this country that we have to get our honor back, and we have to take pride in our government anymore, and I don't think anybody can take pride in this government that we have right now. I sure can't.
Boy, you got that right.
Well, you know, this country is the greatest country in the history of this world. The government, as it's set out, the Constitution, is an incredible system. The problem that we have here is the corruption within. So what we need to do as we, the people, is we need to get behind and start hitting some of these issues head on. This biodiversity treaty principally is to create an illusion or to create a crisis situation in the lieu of war. When the Iron Curtain fell, or when the Great Wall fell in Germany, what did you see? What was this big threat? What was this big bear behind there? What did you actually see but a destitute nation, families in despair? There wasn't any threat. Okay, the threat, we bought it. So what's going on right now is the elimination of war. What are they going to do? What is going to be in its place to control us? So the new game afoot is the conservation issue. And so the biodiversity treaty is principally there to create a crisis situation with the environment, with the ozone hoax. And
and man becomes the enemy. Man is the enemy of the environment, and the environment must be maintained in order to support life on Earth. That's the new war. That's one of the new wars.
Right.
The fool's trying to get everybody else to think like a fool, and the media, if the media wasn't controlled, they wouldn't stand a chance.
Well, you know, I think since you're on the line and other people are listening, is if you would get your hands on this treaty and read it and read the objectives, and if every person in or 5 or 10 people in every state would fax this to the newspaper, every newspaper, small, big, whatever, is the word needs to get out before they steal the rest of our.
Well, don't count on the socialist-owned and controlled newspapers to get it out.
Well,
some of them will, but the majority will ignore it. For instance, New York Times wouldn't even print a one-line comment in the middle of the autos for sale page about it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the light has been turned on for the last probably 3 years, and I think William Cooper has done a great job, but we have to turn on the floodlights, and we have to get it done fast. We have to get people to realize what kind of government they have and what they're doing and who's behind them, why they are doing it.
Well, see, we have to realize that most of the American people don't have shortwave radios, and they're never going to get one. But they do have AM and FM radios, and that's the whole idea behind this new network. If everybody out there listening, whether you have a satellite system or not, get one. I mean, we've made one available for the lowest price in the whole world. And if you don't believe that, just take the components that we've offered and don't tell them what price you can get it for or where you can get it for. Just go down and say, hey, I want to buy these things from you. How much would it cost me? And you're going to find out. Just how inexpensive we've made this. In fact, we're only charging a $10 handling fee. And then if you get a $129 low-power FM transmitter and put up an antenna, we can give the American people an alternate source of information where they can get the real truth and get out from under the propaganda yoke of the socialist-controlled media in this country. We've got to do that.
It brings me to my last question. I'll let another caller get in. When the books were being unloaded and you're getting yourself nice and tired, Gary Bourgeois was handling the program.
Uh-huh.
And I believe I heard him say that the network was switching over to Galaxy 4 Transponder 22 by 0.8.
Well, I will find out from Gary absolutely where we're going, and I'll let you know.
I realized, I turned over there and I listened, and I heard a lot of testing going on, he said after midnight yesterday, I believe, and I was listening, they were doing a lot of testing, and they were running music with no advertisements for hours on end, and, you know, it's kind of like freaking it in,
mm-hmm.
And it sounded really great. If that's where you're going, it sounds like CD quality. I mean, that'd be a good place to go.
Well, it may be, and we are going someplace, that's for sure.
Okay, I'll let another caller get in.
Okay.
Nice talking to you tonight.
And I'll be sure and let all of you know exactly where we're going, folks. So don't get panicky. I'm not gonna leave you holding the bag out there. Thank you for calling. Number is 520-333-4578. You know, there are a lot of other scenarios that they're running at the same time in case that fails. There's the external threat from space scenario. There's the life on Mars scenario. And let's beef up the NASA space program so that we can colonize Mars. And all of these things that are tremendously wasteful welfare projects, if you will, that we can see no immediate gain for anybody, but they take up large sums of money, keep people occupied, and train people's minds upon a common goal or a common enemy so that that they're mobilized and marching in one direction so that they can be controlled and manipulated. And one of the best sources of information about these things that I can think of is the report from Iron Mountain, which everybody should read, in my estimation. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Cooper, this is Jerry in New Mexico.
Hello, Jerry.
Is the subject up matter open?
Sure.
I remember I talked to you a week or so ago about overflights by helicopters and stuff. Do you remember that conversation?
Yes, I do, and I got your package of information, and by golly, you're sure thorough in documenting this stuff, I got to tell you that.
Excellent. Well, I was just checking to make sure that you got it.
Oh, yes.
I was attending a county commission meeting in Ruidoso yesterday, and this subject was brought up, but what I'm mainly interested in getting your opinion on is there was a convention, or not a convention, but a training class going on at the same time at the Civic Center, and it was a police training class for criminal intelligence analysis, and it was being conducted by an Air Force enlisted personnel. Is that the standard procedure nowadays?
As long as they're not actively engaged in the pursuit or apprehension of American citizens for law enforcement purposes, yes, it's perfectly legal.
Just curious, this has been going on here in the in Alamogordo.
It's not desirable, but it's legal.
Yeah. Apparently, there's some a lot of military intelligence cooperation going on.
Well, they're getting ready for the New World Order, and by God, there's going to be a unification of all of these elements into one force eventually. It'd be like the Nazi Gestapo.
I have one question, if you're willing to answer.
And if you want some verification, I read State Department publication 7277.
I have it.
It's all in there, my friend.
The question, though, that I had in mind is, if you're willing to share it with us, do you know anything about John Stadtmiller?
John Stadtmiller. Who is John Stadtmiller?
Well, he's Mark Carnegie's sidekick.
Well, I don't know anything about John Stadtmiller, but I know a lot about Mr. Carnegie. Mr. Carnegie is not who he says he is. Has been buffaloing people for a long, long time. He originally contacted me through my then partner Stan Barrington in 1989. And informed us that he was an active duty officer of the Air Force, attached to the Air Force Office of Special Investigation, and began feeding us a whole bunch of bullshit, really. And so I demanded that he furnish proof of his identity and documentation for the stuff that he was sending us. He assured us that that would be no problem, that he would send us credentials and documentation for what he was sending us, and we never heard from him again. The next time I heard from Mark Carnegie was when I saw a videotape of him, and I forget the name of it, but it was the first one that he came out with. And he was then claiming that he was an Army, United States Army G2 intelligence officer, and putting out the same stuff and all kinds of things. And he is variously proselytized or stolen information from other people, which he has put out, and then he has put out a lot of stuff that's just absolute pure fantasy, and has been fueling the fires, trying to instigate a revolution which would hasten the formation of the New World Order and the destruction of this country. And that's really what Mark Kornke's all about. He's a phony, fake liar. Many people other than myself has demanded that he furnish proof of his identity and documentation of his stuff, and he has always promised to furnish it and has never furnished anything. But the other guy that you're talking about, I don't know anything about him.
Stan Miller has claimed that he's seen his DD-214.
Stan Miller can claim anything he wants to. I've never seen it, and I've never seen any copy of his service record, which if Mark Kornke was really who he said he would, was he could get a complete copy of his service record and make that available to any of us that have asked for it. He has never done it. And I really, frankly, don't give a damn what Mr. Stadmiller has said. I'm the kind of person that unless I can prove it with my own research, it ain't so.
I heard that, and I'm beginning to see the value of that point of view totally.
Good for you.
This, I have purpose in reasoning behind the question that I was asking. I'm in communication with them several times, talked to them over, you know, over their radio program about these helicopters and everything.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a problem with them.
Good for you. you're beginning to catch on. Obviously, you've done some original thinking instead of just blind faith believing.
Well, I'll let the next fella call in, and I sure do appreciate this program and your sharing with us your friendship in this.
Thank you.
And God bless.
Thank you for calling. And God bless you, my friend. 520-333-4570. What do you think about that? You know, have you had any dealings with Kornke or this guy, Stadmiller, whom I really don't know anything about?
No, not at all.
I know you do travel around the country and
interface
with all of us bad patriot types.
No, I haven't run into those guys.
Okay.
But as far as the black helicopters, I was out in Shreveport.
They're real.
Oh, yeah. And there was about five or six of them sitting on the tarmac at the airport. And I asked one of the chaps out there, I said, what are those helicopters there for? And he says, oh, that's for the dope growers out here. And and I said, yeah, with missiles on them and machine guns for dope growers.
And the forward-looking infrared.
Yeah, and then there, then the big convention at Polk Military Base with many, many UN vehicles going in prior to the Olympics.
The Eastern Bloc and Russian troops training in joint operations with the United States military force, which are all really United Nations forces.
Right, right. But see, with this treaty now, with this biodiversity treaty, and with the UN in temporary control of our national parks, now we have a lot of acreage for these chaps to stage their equipment and get ready for the...
Are you trying to tell me, Bob, that the highest echelon of the military officers of all four of the military services of the United States of America are participating in treason and are blatantly disregarding their oath to protect and defend the Constitution for the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic?
I don't think all
question,
of them
question
are.
Mark?
I don't think all of them are.
And then why are they doing this?
Well, there's
blatant disregard of the law and the Constitution.
There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them in there, but I don't think all of them are. And I think that there's probably.
I don't hear any of them protesting.
No, I don't either.
I don't hear them putting their career on it. I don't see them bailing out saying, I'm not going to participate in this.
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if there were some things going on that you and I and the rest of the country don't know yet? Maybe there is some of the armed services there that when they took that oath to protect and defend
the
country.
There are, but we're not going to go into that.
Yeah.
But there are. But the majority of the commanding officers in the military services are blatantly in violation of their oath and are actively engaged in committing treason against this country.
They know where this is all going. And I know that they know because I saw the documentation when I was on the Admiral's briefing team at CPAC Fleet, and that's why I didn't fulfill my desire, which was to serve my country in the military for 30 years and then retire. That was what I was in the process of doing. When I discovered what they were really in the process of bringing about, I couldn't stay anymore. I left. And I spent the rest of my life trying
but you're still serving that obligation.
Oh, yes. But now I'm really serving. I'm not being deluded by anybody, and I'm not deluding myself. I'm really serving my country now. But you know the strangest thing about that is when I was sent to Vietnam, everybody was applauding, and then you're a great patriot, you know, go over and serve your country. And that was before they started spitting on us and all this kind of stuff. And nobody cared if I got killed. Now that I'm here in my country, fighting for my country, really doing the proper thing, the right thing, everybody says, you're going to get killed. You better stop doing that. This is dangerous. I'd like to support you, but I'm afraid I'll get on somebody's list. What's that all about, Bob?
Right.
They'll pat their sons and daughters on the ass, send them over to die in the desert, in Desert Storm. They sent their sons and daughters over to Vietnam to die in some godforsaken land for what? And now the people want to stand up and fight for their country here. Everybody said, oh, you might get killed. Nobody grabbed those people out of line before they got on a ship or on an airplane going to Desert Storm and said, hey, you better think about this. This is really dangerous. You might get killed.
Well, I'll tell you, if the American people don't hurry up and wake up and get behind networking and doing something about this,
they're all going to get killed.
It's going to hit them right straight in the face. So if you people out there want to be informed,
yeah, socialism is not kind to its victims.
No.
At all. Never has been.
Get a copy of this biodiversity treaty and get it out, because as they keep confiscating more and more of our lands and our farmlands, it's just slipping away right underneath us. So the 5-minute warning went off and nobody heard it.
Yeah, and it's real easy to lose this stuff. It's going to be really difficult to get it back, because they're not going to want to give it up. And remember what Mao Zedong say, or Mao Zedong, as some people say, you can pronounce it any way you want, folks. He was that big communist bad guy that we all, believed was the big bugaboo that created communist China. Well, he wasn't all wrong, because he said at least one thing that I know of that's absolutely true, and you can hang your hat on it, take it to the bank, and you better bet on it and believe it. All power emanates from the barrel of a gun. He who has no gun has no power. Don't ever give up your guns under any pretext whatsoever. Form militias or join a militia. Get behind freedom. Get behind the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Resist tyranny at all costs. He who is not willing to die for what they believe in or for what they value will not long have it. And that's the only thing they're really afraid of, is people who have no fear, who are willing to die for what they believe is right.
You know, what was the percentage of people that...
Somewhere between 3 and 5. You're talking about the Revolutionary War?
Yeah.
Somewhere between 3 and 5%. I think the real figure is about 3.5% or 3.8% of the people who lived in the colonies at that time actually participated in the overthrow of the European regime under King George and fought the revolution that created this nation. The rest of the people were either pro King George or really didn't give a damn.
Right.
And didn't participate.
Or just said, you go ahead and you fight it, and I'm behind you, but...
Yeah, behind you.
So,
way behind you.
So I guess...
But I'm back here, don't worry.
So I guess what we need now is 10% of the population to do something. And all the sheep out there that still have your head in the dark, keep it there. That's where it belongs. Because
read Veritas, read the Sheeple cartoon.
That may cause you to look in the mirror at yourself a little differently from now on. Oh my, did I really say that? Well, where do we go from here, Robert? Mr. Swan?
Well, let's see, what are the solutions? What do you feel the solutions are, Bill?
Well,
in other words, there's a lot of people out there that talk about all of the problems, but
I know the solution. It's just not propitious time to execute that solution yet. I believe that everybody should act in a legal and lawful manner to do everything that they can peacefully within the system to bring about an awakening and a return to constitutional republican government and to take the corruption out of the political and legal system, because there is no justice in the courts today. And there is not a politician that I can identify who's not just a barefaced liar who has another agenda other than what he's telling us. And aside from that, I believe sincerely that everybody must prepare themselves spiritually, physically, and materially to fight a guerrilla warfare for anywhere between 10 and 20 years, because that's how long it's going to take once it begins. I don't think that any of us want it. We don't seek it. Certainly I have done everything that I can in my life to wake up enough people so to where there would be a consensus opinion where it didn't have to happen. But I'm now firmly convinced that they're going to force us up against the wall in a series of acts that are just despicable. And they're going to bring overwhelming force against certain minority religions and groups like they did the Branch Davidians and the Weaver family. And that could happen to me very soon because of this action that they're trying to take against me down in Phoenix. Eventually the American people are going to realize that the only way that they're going to restore Republican government and save their freedoms is to fight for them and reclaim them. The very basic tenet in common law is that you're not entitled to any rights or privileges that you do not claim and are not willing to defend. And that's the truth.
Well, what we need to do is get out there and get our churches informed about their 501c status and start working in the communities, families and so on, and have weekly meetings or prayer groups, if you would,
and go to city council meetings and vote and do everything that you possibly can to put patriots in office. And I'm not talking about religious fanatics. I mean, I'm talking about patriots who really understand and value freedom for all peoples of all religions, of all ancestral origins, and stop buying into this Hegelian dialectic bullshit that we all have to hate each other and kill each other, because that's not true. There is a common denominator. There is something that we all appreciate and love, and that's freedom. Good evening. You're on the air, if you're still there.
Yes, Bill. It's Pete. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, Pete. How are you?
Pretty good. I got my satellite receiver back, so I was going through withdrawal because I couldn't hear Bill for a moment.
Oh, well, that's sure wonderful. Last time I talked to you, you were in the process of doing that. It's good hearing your voice in this medium.
Are you listening to the broadcast tonight?
Yeah, I walked out my front porch so you wouldn't yell at me for hearing the delay, though.
Oh.
Anyway, I was talking with some, well, I talk to some people a lot of time, almost every day, about this stuff and what's going on in the world. One thing I'm not really clear on, now, Bob Dole, Jack Kemp, I know they're both Freemasons, but I thought they were Eastern Establishment, isn't that right?
Bob Dole is not Eastern Establishment, he's Kansas puppet.
Oh, but Kemp is, though, isn't he?
Kemp, I believe, is, yeah. Bob Dole is a Kansas puppet. He is a liar. He is a betrayer. Can you imagine? This is the guy that promised us that he would make sure that NAFTA never passed. That he assured us that it would never, ever pass the Senate.
Right.
And what did we see? We saw him standing next to Clinton with a big smile on his face as they announced the passage, the agreement with the majority of the Senate to pass NAFTA. And then the next was GATT. He assured us GATT would not pass. GATT was detrimental to the American people. And he did the same thing. And you go back through his history, you'll find he's done it all the way. You know who introduced the counterterrorism bill that was passed after the bombing of the Oklahoma City Mirror Federal Building? You know who introduced it and was the sponsor? Bob Dole. You know who promised us that he would repeal the assault weapons ban and who has not done it, not even introduced it, and says he's not going to? Bob Dole.
Oh, I can't figure that guy out because here he goes, he fights in a war, which was...
Bob Dole doesn't give a damn about this country or the Constitution. Bob Dole has sold us out a long time ago. Bob Dole is a traitor. He is a habitual liar. And then at the Republican National Convention, he got up and made this glorious speech promising us everything that he knew we wanted to hear. And then he said, and I'm going to do away with this World Trade Organization because it's destroying America, it's detrimental to America, and it's impinging upon our sovereignty, and we're going to get rid of it. Guess what? Bob Dole is the one who is responsible for the World Trade Organization.
Yes, that's true. That's what I was telling the people I'm talking to.
So if you want to vote for Bob Dole, you know what you're doing, don't you?
Well, so Bob Dole then is a Scottish Rite Southern jurisdiction guy then.
Yeah, 33rd degree.
Okay. Because I know that the other two that are in there now are. So the word still is that Clinton could be reelected, though, from what you have heard?
I got to tell you right now, there is nothing that I can see that is going to stop Bill Clinton from a second term.
In a way, that's
going to take a miracle of some kind. If, you know, it could happen.
I don't know.
Somebody could beat him.
Dole was in, though. It could be worse. He'd have his Republican Congress.
Dole would be worse. Dole's a Nazi.
He wanted, really. Could be.
Dole would be a tremendously dangerous president. He's a Nazi. You better believe it. See, we had a choice between a communist and a Nazi. You take your choice. You pick the lesser of two evils is a vote for evil. I don't care how you look at it. In this election, you got to throw your vote somewhere else or throw it away.
Well,
you cannot justify voting for the lesser of two evils because a vote for evil is still a vote for evil, whether it's lesser or greater.
Yeah, I just tell people to concentrate on their congressional races, really, because I think it's kind of useless to vote for president either way.
Well, yeah, we don't pick the candidates. They're given to us. They're chosen by the powers that be so that it doesn't matter who wins. You see, it's never mattered in recent times whether Republican or Democrat has been in the White House. You know, and all this posturing and pretended infighting notwithstanding, the truth is there's not a nickel's worth of difference between the two. They're both leading us to a new world order. The Republicans are more fascist and Nazi in their methods, and the Democrats are more communist in their methods.
Yeah, now, the Republican Party, I thought they were aligned with English Freemasonry and...
That's absolutely correct. When's the last time you've been to England?
Pardon me?
When's the last time you've been to England?
About 10 years ago.
Do you think that that's a free country?
Oh, no.
No, it's a socialist country.
Socialist.
Where they don't even have a Bill of Rights and wouldn't even think of... If anybody in England got on the air and said the things that I say on this broadcast in England, they'd be in prison for the rest of their life.
Probably Canada, too, isn't that right?
Canada, you better bet your life.
I heard of a guy there who was a comedian, and he just had a funny thing about the prime minister.
Yeah, all he did was make fun of a politician and went to jail.
That's right. Of course, somebody right here in Chicagoland told Clinton he sucked, and I think they
went to jail.
They're in, I don't know if they're still in jail, but I know they went.
No, they're not, but they went to jail. Now, what does that tell you about where this country's going? Yeah.
Anyway, it's nice to hear you again.
Well, you see, I don't care if I go to jail. I'm going to do what's right. President Clinton, you suck. You hear me? President Clinton, you suck.
Well, I'm going to try and string up my FM transmitter up on my roof tomorrow. I'll try not to fall off the thing.
Not only that, President Clinton, you're a communist. Suck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm standing outside looking at the stars out here, and it reminds me of when we were in the desert.
Bob's standing on the window ledge getting ready to jump out.
Boy, it's good hearing your voice there, Pete. Yeah, I wish you could tell the listening audience here when you were a pilot and actually flew drugs with the armed escort.
Man, I was really a BSer when I was talking to you.
Well, you know, it's just you got to be careful what you say to old Swan here because I remember it all. Anyway, that was another another story. But you're sounding good.
Okay, well, I'll be talking to you later.
Okay, Pete. Take care.
Thanks for calling.
Yep, thanks.
520-333-4578. Boy, you know, like, sometimes I give people heart attacks. Anita Post, I have no fear. We must do the right thing, no matter the cost. Because of freedom, you know, if none of it is worth dying for, then we're never going to have it. And that's the truth. And if you think patting your sons and daughters on the ass and sending them off to die in Kuwait is something glorious, but it's not glorious to stand up and risk dying here for freedom, for our country, then you're going to get what you deserve. And what you deserve is to be in chains. And that's the truth.
You know, I know you made the same promises to your kids when they were born, but I distinctly remember when both of my sons were born that I looked at them, and I'm sure everybody out there that's listening right now made the same promise to that newborn, that you would do everything in your power to protect that child. And you'd do everything in your power to make sure that that child had a better life than you. So,
or at least a life that's just as good.
Right. So our responsibility is, I feel, it's not for this generation. It's for the next generation.
Because even if we're successful, it's going to take the rest of our lifetime to see the results of that success.
That's right. But at least when I leave, I'll know that I did the best that I could do to help out this country and protect my family.
Yeah, and you can hold your chin up and you can look the gatekeeper right in the eye and say, I've done my best.
Let me in.
What's the judgment?
That's right.
And there will be a judgment, folks. If you're not on the right side, I'm afraid you're not going to get in. You know, wherever it is that you want to get in. I want to go where Bob's going. I know where he's going, so.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, I've just, it's been a long day.
It has been a long day. We've covered a lot of ground over here today. It's nice spending all those hours with you and, realizing what's going on.
Saw the book today. What do you think about the book?
Oh, yeah, the book is fantastic. The day one, the Oklahoma City bombing, incredible. Absolutely, the cover's astounding. It's black with a rose and a fire underneath the rose and no title. And you look at it and you have to pick it up. I started reading it after our conversation. Everybody should have it. Buy two and then pass them on.
Yeah, actually, you should buy copies for your senators and your state and your representatives and your governor of your state, your local sheriff, and your police chief. Because these are people that need to read that book. Not just you, not just your neighbor, but the important people that make the decisions in this country. Because a lot of them are being controlled by powerful forces. And they really don't know how they're being used. They don't understand what's going on. Believe me, the guy that you sent to Congress that was old dippity doo-dah Ford dealer down the street, you know, that you sent to Congress, just because you sent him to Congress doesn't make him any smarter than he was before he left, folks. He's the same old dippity doo-dah Ford dealer, except he's in Washington, and now he's a legislation dealer. So buy him a book. Make sure that it gets put in his hands and not in the hands of one of his advisors who might just throw it in the trash can. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. I am a microbroadcaster. You're on the air with me in Charleston, South Carolina.
Wonderful. How much area does your broadcast cover?
Oh, a couple 3 miles.
Oh, that's fantastic.
At the moment.
Yeah.
What happened? I called to kind of share the story. Somebody is irritated with me, and they complained, and I got a letter from the FCC addressed to residents. And today I sent off a response.
Addressed to resident?
Yes.
What you should do is send it back saying no such person at this address.
Well.
Unless your name is resident, you have to do that.
Fortunately, I signed for it, so. I got it.
Doesn't matter. Say signed for by mistake. I did not read the address. No such person at this address, and send it back to them.
So
I'm serious.
I responded to them with a few sites and whatnot. And,
well, if you've already done that, then okay. But remember, if you get a letter that's not specifically addressed to you, don't ever accept it.
Well, there were other possibilities that I did not particularly want to endure, which were like the sheriff serving it or some such thing as that. So I went ahead and responded to them. But I think it's a pretty strong response.
Good.
I can probably put it in my fax and send it to you if you're interested in seeing it.
Yes, please do.
And
I'll send you some other stuff that might help you out.
But
we've done this before for low power broadcasters that they harass.
We don't want to go away simply by some intimidation. So we won't.
Good for you.
And we just want to thank you for being there, Bill.
Well, thank you for being there, and thank you for taking your proper stand and not being afraid and not being intimidated, because that's usually the only weapon they have to use against us. And if you know the law and you understand the Constitution and the proper venue and jurisdiction, there's not a thing that they can do to you unless you're broadcasting across a state line, across an international boundary, or across a large body of water where a ship at sea can receive your broadcast. And if you're broadcasting low power FM, that ain't going to happen.
They cited FCC Act 1934, Section 301, and the only thing I could find in there that even pertained to it was that there's an amendment in 1982 that said that you can't broadcast from a point within a state to a point within a state to another point within the same state, and that's just ridiculous. The other three things, the interstate and the relations to commerce and the interference and all the other stuff, obviously.
Remember that the only power that the federal government has over anybody within a state deals with interstate commerce.
Right.
All other power reverts to the state or to the people. So if you're not engaged in interstate commerce, if you're not broadcasting across state lines or international boundaries, then you're okay. You have to look for state legislation or state laws governing you. If there are none, then the power falls to the people, which is you, and you're free to do whatever you want as long as you're not interfering with the rights or property of anybody else.
That's my position.
Then you're right on target, my friend.
Okay, Bill. I thank you very much, and good evening.
Good evening to you. And by golly, that's it, folks. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
Good night.
You can make it big. You can make it bigger than life. Your name is spelled right. Up on the bright side. Have a little faith in yourself. Everything that you do, I know you're gonna make it big if you want to. If you really want to, you can make it big.
This is the voice of freedom. This is the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
To Quest for Health, and I'm your host, Michael Cottingham. Well, we're back once again, and I'm going to tell you about a man who's changing the face of Western medicine, a man who he's literally single-handedly has changed the way many MDs and the way Western medicine actually is going about doing business. And the reason we're going to talk about this man is because I hear over and over there are no good doctors, that Western medicine is really going down the tubes, and it's too expensive, and that's a fact. And this one Harvard MD that many of you may know,